Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' basement, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640. There are certain historical dates that are forever etched in our minds and hearts. We remember exactly where we were, what we were doing, maybe even what we were wearing or who we were talking to on certain dates of historical import. December 7th, 1941, November 22nd, 1963, December 8th, 1980. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, the assassination of JFK, the murder of John Lennon. Those are indelible for different generations. Well, I can remember exactly where I was June 29th, 1978. I was working in my father's store on Market Street in Brantford, Ontario. Summer holidays were just starting. I had just graduated from grade 8. I sat down in a chair at the back of the store, picked up the Brantford Expositor. And there on the front page, I read about the grisly murder of my favorite television actor, Bob Crane, brutally bludgeoned to death in his apartment in Scottsdale, Arizona. Bob Crane was not a rock star. He was not the president. But to me and most of my 14-year-old pals, there was no cooler, more enjoyable television character than Crane's Colonel Hogan. He was the central character in an unlikely situation comedy taking place in a prisoner of war camp in Germany during the Second World War. And even though Hogan's Heroes had ended its run about 7 years earlier, it continued to live on in reruns, and I never missed an episode. I saw them all many times. I just loved the way Colonel Hogan made wise with the Nazis, made them look so foolish. He was a kind of a hero to me. I remember feeling like I'd been punched in the gut after reading about his death, and I couldn't watch Hogan's Heroes again for many years. And even now, when I hear that theme song, it's like a time machine. It takes me back to public school, racing home before my sisters got in front of the TV. I needed to control the TV at 4:30 so I could watch Hogan's Heroes. They wanted to watch Here Comes the Bride, or Here Come the Brides, with Bobby Sherman and David Soul. Even now, if I watch an episode, it's tainted with such sadness. This June will mark the 39th anniversary of Crane's murder, and it is still unsolved. The original suspect, really the only suspect, was a friend of Bob's, a hanger-on, if you will, by the name of John Henry Carpenter. Carpenter was finally put on trial for the murder 16 years later, but was eventually acquitted. This despite the fact that blood found in Carpenter's rental car seemed to match Crane's rare type B blood. The only problem was DNA testing was barely in its infancy back then. Even in 1994, when Carpenter went on trial, DNA testing was still a little shaky. In the second half of the show, veteran reporter John Hook will be here. His new book, Who Killed Bob Crane, essentially starts a 40-year-old cold case from the beginning. It's a first-hand account of his two-year investigation and search for the truth. The murder, seen through the eyes of the people who were there, witnesses, detectives, prosecutors, jurors, and family members. Who Killed Bob Crane with John Hook? That's hours 3 and 4. Coming up, a few weeks ago, it suddenly dawned on me that I had given up far too emotional space in my life to the presidential election. For nearly 6 months, I was glued to television news and my iPhone. I pored over every online story, every poll I could get my hands on. The word obsessed would not be inaccurate. Finally, the other night, for the first time in what seems like forever, I actually decided to forego the political punditry. I put my feet up and I watched a hockey game instead. And within minutes, I found myself enjoying the game. And that's when it hit me. I said to myself, that's enough. It's time to cleanse the palate. The politics will rage on whether I'm watching or not. And I thought for tonight, for the sake of my sanity and perhaps yours, tonight would be a great time to get back to basics, revisit one of the themes that Coast has explored so well over the years, and one of those areas that is really right in the coast-to-coast wheelhouse, encounters with monsters. eyewitness accounts of upright canines throughout central Pennsylvania, to be precise. Lon Strickler has been researching and investigating in the paranormal space for nearly 40 years, and he's chronicled a whole slew of these credible bipedal canine encounters in his latest Phantoms and Monsters series of books. This one is called Phantoms and Monsters Unexplained Encounters. One of the things that jumped out at me immediately is how credible these eyewitnesses seem and how they seem to be genuinely shaken and scared by these close-up encounters. This is not Bigfoot. Remember, whatever these things are, they have a snout, large glowing yellow eyes, and presumably large canine teeth, you know, the ones used for ripping and tearing flesh. It's really strange to say talking about encounters with monsters is going to be a welcome departure from the blood sport that is U.S. presidential politics, because these are really frightening reports. I mean, the W word has come up in these reports, as in werewolf. But despite the chilling nature of these stories, I'm looking forward to getting a good scare on. Quite frankly, I think we can all use the distraction. So, for a recap, for those of you keeping score at home, reopening and hopefully solving the 40-year-old cold case murder of actor Bob Crane. First up, impossibly tall bipedal canine creatures rampaging through the woods of central Pennsylvania. Sounds like 4 hours of appointment tune radio. Come on in, weary stranger, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. Why don't you stay a while? In the summer of 2015, Phantoms and Monsters, Fortean Research, the UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania Lichen Investigations started to receive eyewitness accounts of upright canines throughout central Pennsylvania. And a number of these eyewitness reports are featured in the new book, Phantoms and Monsters, Mysterious Encounters. Lon Strickler is a Fortean researcher, author, and publisher of the syndicated Phantoms and Monsters blog. He began the blog in 2005, which has steadily grown in popularity and read daily by tens of thousands of paranormal enthusiasts, investigators, and those seeking the truth. His research and reports have been featured on hundreds of online media sources. Several of these published reports have been presented on various television segments, including the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, Sci-Fi's Paranormal Witness, Fact or Faked Paranormal Files, and Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America. He's been interviewed on several radio broadcasts, including multiple guest appearances on our very own Coast to Coast AM. He was also featured on Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America television show for the Sykesville Monster episode. Lon is partnered with Sean Forker and Butch Witkowski at Arcane Radio. Lon Strickler, welcome back to Coast. Thanks for hanging out. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me, Richard. I'm doing fine.
Take me back to the summer of 2015 when these stories, I'm not sure if suggesting that they were pouring in is a bit of an embellishment, but a little out of the ordinary that you were receiving so many of these reports in a bunch like this. But take me back to the summer of 2015 and how this all began.
Well, there always had been dogman or upright canine reports coming out of Pennsylvania, actually for over a century. But it was very sporadic. You know, you get one here, one there, all over the state. And there was really no investigation of these creatures. The only person that ever really did any investigations was Stan Gordon. And on Friday, November 7th, we received a cryptid sighting report. And the witness stated that he was in the north edge of a state game land 331, which is in Clearfield County, Pennsylvania, just south of Penfield. It was between 10 and 11 in the morning, and he was walking two of his dogs when some unknown bipedal creature just stepped out of the brush. And in fact, it was almost like it came out of nowhere. He described it as being 8 to 10 foot tall, unknown weight, large stride, short hair, dark colored, but most likely brown, but very dark. And he at first thought it may have been a Bigfoot, but he did notice a prominent snout like a canine. Now, the witness said it took all his strength to hold on to his dogs, but the creature never reacted to the dog's barking. It just stared straight ahead and continued to walk briskly away into the forest. Now, the witness and others returned to the location the next day, and they found the exact area where the dogs had dug into the ground attempting to chase the creature. But as soon as they got there, the group was very uneasy, and they quickly left. And this was actually the first initial report that we received. Now, this had occurred in, like I said, November 7th of 2014, and it wasn't reported us till that next summer in 2015.
And how in terms of your involvement in these investigations, do you speak to the witnesses personally on the phone? Do you correspond with them?
Well, this particular witness got a hold of Butch Witkowski, who's the director of Pennsylvania UFO Research Center. And he and I have been working together on other cases, including the Todd C's disappearance and death case and a few other things. And that report came to him. So, you know, we didn't really think much about it other than we did look into it. And, you know, I did a story of it on the blog. But not long after, I received another report from a gentleman in Clearfield County again, and it was near Penfield. And the first thing that this was actually sent to me, the thing he had right on top was, "I saw a werewolf."
Ah, yes, the W word.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, we'll see. So he told us that the encounter happened in late July of 2015. He said he was driving home from work on Boy Scout Road in Penfield. He said he usually sticks to the main roads when driving home, but sometimes takes the back road to take in the scenery. Now, this was actually during the day, but it was in the evening, so it was still light out. See, he said, "As I was coming around the bend, I saw a large brownish tan creature crouching on the side of the road. He said, I slowed down to get a better look. That's when it turned its head towards my vehicle. It had a large head and a yellowish glow to its eyes and a long nose. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. It was eating roadkill, I believe a deer." So he said he slammed on the gas and he hauled on home. It really
No kidding. No kidding.
Yeah. And so when I got back to him by email, I didn't talk to him. When I get back to him by email, he told me that there was another incident that he really didn't think much about until he had this encounter. He said about a month prior to that, he said he was at a local mini mart getting gasoline, and a game commission officer pulled up next to the next pump, and attached to the truck was a trailer, and in the trailer was an elk. He said a lot of the elks have radio collars, and one dies, it's the game commission's job to figure out how it died to take samples. So he said he asked the man what had happened, and he said it was a young elk about 2 to 3 years at most. He said it looked fine to him, except for the fact that his throat was slit. He said the game commission officer told him that he had no clue that when he found it, the collar had been wearing was about 10 foot away. He said at first they thought it was a bear, as it's the only animal around here large enough to take down a bull elk, but there was no evidence indicating it was a bear. Plus, he told him that the cut on the throat was just too clean.
Right. You mentioned a collar. You mentioned a collar around the elk. You mentioned a collar around the elks. This is like a radio transmission collar to track the animals by game wardens?
Exactly.
Okay.
And the collar itself is actually slit clean as well. So it was, the throat was cut and the collar itself were cut just like they were cut with a knife. So, you know, we had that. So we had this report. So now we were getting interesting because this happened approximately 3 miles away from the other incident. And we have had other cryptid sightings in the Clearfield County area anyway. So we,
and again,
we're going to.
Sorry, sorry to interrupt, Lon, but I mean, I'm fascinated by the physicality of these creatures. You mentioned the height. Did you say between 8 and 10 feet? That was one of the first sightings in 2015.
First sighting, the man said it was between 8 and 10 foot. Yeah.
Lord, oh Lord, and in one of the accounts I read, someone I believe was one of the eyewitnesses described to your partner Butch. He described it, imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger, that kind of brawn and musculature, sort of covered in hair. Is that an apt description? I mean, are we talking about something that muscular?
Yeah, some of these, and if not most of these sightings where the creature is seen in full body and standing upright, it's always has that definition, like a full chest and then a very skinny waist, like that of a, you know, just like of most dogs, and then it has arms, human like arms with hands and claws, and a lot of times the feet are very long, but they have toes and nails on them as well.
And these are, again, these are bipedal creatures. How are they describing the gait? How do they move quickly? Do they kind of saunter? Do they run?
Well, most of the ones that we have that they, you know, have been described running are mostly, I mean, they are mostly running. But as far as the gait goes, it's kind of a smooth gait. I mean, it's nothing that's kind of over exaggerated. I've had sightings in other areas of the country, and it's very similar. Even up in southern Canada, we had a lot of sightings. And we're getting, you know, the sightings are pretty similar. It's kind of a smooth gait, but they're long strides.
And the witnesses, how would you describe these witnesses? Is there any sort of common denominator? Is there a particular demographic? I mean, do you speak with you know, are there police? Are there sort of professional type people, or who are these people that are reporting these sightings?
No, it runs a gamut from professional to back somebody who lives in the woods who's, you know, a backwoodsman, females, males, young, old, all walks of life.
I understand there was a sighting from a pilot.
Oh yeah, that sighting. That wasn't in Pennsylvania. That one was in near Denver in I just forget the name of the town, but it was in the northern suburb of Denver, and the individual who had the encounter, it actually happened in his backyard, and he was a professional person, and he didn't want to put his name out or anything, but it was lucky enough that we had people that I knew that were investigators that were there, and in the same, actually the one gentleman, Jack Carey, he lived in the same neighborhood. And I happened to get him to go over there and take the interview. And I was told that it was one of the best interviews that they've ever had. The guy was totally freaked out because of it. And those sightings have been, you know, we haven't had any more sightings. We had one near Table Rock a couple of months after that, but I'm not really sure what that was. That could have been anything. But it did sound like an upright canine.
So we have, we've heard, you know, but the Beast of Bray Road, which is in Wisconsin. We have the Dog Man from Michigan. There are reports, I think it's on your blog, of these bipedal canines in Minnesota, I think in near Taylor Falls, Minnesota. We have these bipedal canines in Pennsylvania. You mentioned Colorado. We'll come back in a minute and pick up on this conversation, but are we talking about the same species? Are this, how widespread are these creatures? Lon Strickler is with us. He is the publisher and author with a very popular blog, Phantoms and Monsters. Here's Paul McCartney, Venus and Mars, taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Great interpreter of songs. The late Joe Cocker, the barrel-chested troubadour from Sheffield, England, and his version of the immortal Many Rivers to Cross by Jimmy Webb. Our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasore, has posted this in the carousel up at coasttocoastam.com. A night vision camera in Australia has captured a puzzling glimpse of a diminutive creature that no one seems to be able to identify. It's posted online, or it was posted online, to a Facebook page devoted to wildlife conservation in Australia. The video was filmed in a wooded area on the outskirts of Sydney. Check it out. It features an odd animal that appears to possess the characteristics of a variety of creatures, including a tail resembling a kangaroo and a gait that is reminiscent of a cat's prowl. Viewers of the video have suggested a variety of suspects for the creature, including a wallaby, a possum, and a tree kangaroo. Well, see your possum and tree kangaroo, and I'll give you an 8 to 10 foot bipedal canine with the physique of Franco Colombo. So there. Hey, get this. ParanormalDate.com, they are quickly approaching, this is remarkable, 59,000 members. ParanormalDate.com, at last a dating site to meet others with similar interests, and it's free to join. You can use the code GEORGE for a sizable discount if you want to go get further involved. ParanormalDate.com. Remember, you are not alone. When we come back, more of my conversation with Lon Strickler, the author publisher of Phantoms and Monsters blog, as we continue to delve into these bipedal canine cryptids, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Freudian researcher Lon Strickler. And the latest in his series of Phantoms and Monsters books is Phantoms and Monsters, Unexplained Encounters. Before the break, Lon, I was asking you, or trying to get a sense of how widespread these sightings are, because you had mentioned Colorado. We're talking about recent sightings in Pennsylvania. We have the Michigan Dogman. We have the Beast of Bray Road in Wisconsin. So how widespread are they across the continental United States? And do you imagine we're talking about the same species? Is it the same thing in all these cases?
Most of the descriptions are pretty similar. I had gotten several upright canine, dogman, whatever you want to call them, sightings in Michigan and Wisconsin, the upper Midwest, for years, since I've started the blog. But recently, the past 2 years, I've been getting sightings elsewhere, actual encounters. Southern Ontario, I had received at least three sightings in 2014 and 2015. And then, of course, all these sightings in Pennsylvania. There have been other sightings in Ohio, Kentucky, and the other parts of the upper Midwest, and including Minnesota, where we're looking into an habituation area up near the Canadian border.
Southern Ontario, that's my backyard. I don't know if I wanted to hear that. Now, do any of these encounters involve any sort of menacing gestures or a posturing on the part of this cryptid? Do these people that have these encounters, I know they're scared out of their wits at the mere sight of this creature, but do any of them, have any of them ever felt as if they were in imminent physical danger?
Yeah, of course, I did mention the one with the guy called a werewolf, and I mean that was, I guess, a menacing gesture. But I think he was just busy eating. We had a sighting, an apparent sighting in Michaux State Forest, the northern part of Michaux State, well, the central part of Michaux State Forest, by a woman and her husband who had a cabin there. And she states that she was chased back into her cabin by one of these creatures. I'm not sure if that is actually what it was. There have been Bigfoot sightings in that area before. So I'm not sure if that's exactly what it was. There have been other sightings. There was a which was actually consider we consider menacing. An individual in Blair County had been hunting on near one of the state game lands, and he walked up to what he thought, well, he didn't really know what to think it was, but he saw the legs from coming up from underneath a laurel bush. And when he looked directly at it, this thing was standing. He could see the legs, and then he could see the head. And apparently, it bared its teeth and growled at him. And now the guy was armed with a shotgun, but he just started backing off. He wasn't going to take a chance with it. And that was quite frightening. And recently, I had a, the first week of deer season in Pennsylvania, there was a sighting in just north of the Tuscarora State Forest, which I think is Perry County. A hunter in a deer stand saw what he initially thought was a wolf, but he said he described it as a like a hyena-like canine. Good size, had the head of a wolf, but this was a quadruped. Wasn't bipedal. But he said the thing stood about 100 and some yards away from him and just watched him and growled at him, and then he took off. So, yeah, they do seem to stand their ground. And so far, we haven't had anybody taking any shots at them. But, it seems that the witnesses all state that they get this sense, and I don't know if it's just something instinctive or what it is. They get this sense not to try to shoot it. Now, I don't know if that's because, as a result of the animal itself, or they're just so scared that they don't want to take a chance with it.
Is the suggestion that there may be some sort of a telepathic communication going on between this cryptid and the witnesses?
Well, we have heard that with Bigfoot reports in the past. And I'm not saying if that's exactly what's going on here, but who knows? It may be a possibility.
I haven't heard you mention, or I don't recall reading in these eyewitness encounters, any mention of the ears on this creature. I mean, what kind of, if it's a canine, does it have sort of typical canine ears? Are they pointed straight up? Are they flopping down? What do the ears look like? Do we know?
The ones that I had described in or described to us were like wolf's ears, pointed and sticking straight up.
All right. And how about the eyes? In one account I read, at least one, they talked about yellow glowing eyes.
Yeah, that's pretty common. The yellow eyes, the bright yellow eyes. Sometimes they're like a silverish color, but they're always fairly bright.
And do they, you mentioned in one encounter, the wolf bear, or this creature bared its teeth and sort of growled. But what other sounds do they make? Do they howl like a wolf?
I have, we have ever never heard of actually anyone seeing one of these creatures howling or making any other sounds other than growling.
And what about physical evidence? I mean, have there been, do we have plaster casts of footprints? Do we have photographic evidence, scat? Do we have hair samples?
We have nothing. That's what makes it so interesting and amazing. You know, we're not discounting that these are supernatural beings. It's crazy that some people may think that sounds, and of course there are several people that think most cryptids are possibly multidimensional or some type of being other than flesh and blood. But I don't know. You know, we just do not have any physical evidence.
Not even tracks.
Nothing.
That is bizarre. What about, I mean, do you put like boots on the ground? Do you go into these areas and do an investigation on the ground, or is it mainly communicating with the eyewitnesses and taking down the reports?
No, Butch Witkowski has a van where he has a lot of equipment, a lot of diagnostic equipment and investigation equipment. And he and other people in the group have gone out since we've started receiving these sighting reports. And in fact, he's done three fairly extensive and multiple investigations at one time since the winter of 2015.
It's interesting. The reports, not all, but many of them seem to be in daylight, so they're not necessarily nocturnal creatures.
Yeah, and that is another strange aspect of this. All the reports that we have seen, other than one, has been during the day.
Almost all of them during the day.
Yep.
Interesting. Now, yes, sir. You mentioned the possibility that these are interdimensional or paranormal. Any connection with, do you think, Skinwalker Ranch? I mean, could these be skinwalkers?
I suppose it's possible. You know, the skinwalkers themselves are basically the manifestation of a witch or a Navajo witch or a Ute witch. And I don't know if that's the case here in Pennsylvania. But in Skinwalker Ranch, the wolves that they had seen on that location were seen to manifest from a type of funnel or cone that was seen on the property. I'm not saying that they aren't supernatural. And in fact, I think for the most part that they very well may be, since that first report was that this creature just came out of thin air from the bush, and it ignored the dogs that were barking at it. Never attempted to take off any faster or to look around. So was it some type of manifestation, you know, from an alternate universe of some type or whatever? I don't know. You know, this is what makes, you know, this is why we were asking the questions and doing the actual physical investigations.
I remember a conversation with Nick Redfern about a similar type creature, but in England. Again, bipedal, canine in appearance. But these sightings tended to be clustered around sort of ancient sacred sites like Stonehenge and similar. I mean, is there any connection with these sightings and, I don't know, Native American burial grounds or some perhaps ley lines? I'm grasping at straws here, Lon.
Right. I mean, and that's exactly what we've been doing, grasping at straws and trying to find an explanation. We did look into the Native American aspect of this, and though the Lenape tribes, the Delaware Indian tribes, also the Shawnee had some type of canine creatures in their folklore, it doesn't resemble or seem to be related to what we're seeing or what people are seeing, other than that they sometimes just seem to manifest or, you know, or disappear at, you know, at a moment's notice. I don't know. I don't know if there's a connection. As far as ley lines go, I haven't had any readings taken in areas for low magnetism or anything that would be related to ley lines. So I don't know. I really don't.
We're coming up on the top of the hour. What we'll do is we'll open up the phone lines after that, and who knows? You know, maybe someone out there listening has had an encounter with one of these bipedal canines. Lon Strickler is with us. Phantom and Monsters is the blog, very popular. And the new book, his latest in his series of Phantoms and Monsters book, is Phantoms and Monsters, Unexplained Encounters. Share with us, if you will, another sighting. This one was in Cambria County. This was a 42-year-old woman who claimed she was of sober mind.
Yeah, this was kind of unusual. This occurred in a town by the name of Portage. And she was walking her dogs near a park, a town park in Portage. And we had investigators go out there after she had made the report. She stated that she had seen, there was a sign in the park, and she had seen the legs of what looked like a canine, but it was just the two back legs. Now, she never saw anything from the legs on up, and the dogs that were with her never reacted, but I guess her sense of fear just kicked in, and she had no idea what it was, so she did contact us. But the unusual thing was when our investigators got to the location later on and started talking to other people in the area, there were at least three other sightings in and around the town.
And again, she estimated this creature at 7 feet tall.
This is a physical being. There are coal mines, abandoned coal mines in the area. And, you know, this may be an area where they may be hiding at, or, you know, where they're habitating at.
Well, come on, Lon, get your flashlight or your miner's helmet. Let's go.
Yeah, well, I'll pass on that.
And again, she mentioned this huge figure, seven feet tall, she estimates. And she was walking, she had her 5-pound Chihuahua with her and her 80-pound pit bull she took for a stroll in the park. And neither of these animals reacted.
Nope. No, they didn't. And that again, is something very unusual. It makes you think that, well, maybe this thing wasn't flesh and blood, but you know, animals have been known to react to manifestations, spiritual or some type of energy as well. So I don't know what the situation was, but I know another witness did confirm that something had been seen before in the area when a lot of dogs and cats in the neighborhood started going missing. And the one sighting, the person had described something very similar to what we have been, you know, seeing with these upright canines.
Well, it's a head scratcher to be sure. And the nub of it is, again, no physical evidence. And yet you have these reports. And as you stated, these go back a century. Although now, at least in 2015, they seem to be coming in clusters.
Yes.
We're coming up on a break here. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, questions and comments, and hopefully some more eyewitness encounters for Lon Strickler. And I also want to get into a discussion, maybe some more prosaic explanations. If these are not interdimensional creatures, what else could they be? I mean, the question that jumps out to me immediately is, you know, how long would it take to selectively breed a bipedal dog, or how long would it take for that adaptation to take hold in the wild? Okay, admittedly, I am grasping at straws again, but, you know, consider the alternative. an 8 to 10 foot bipedal canine. Here's Eric Clapton, Stones in My Passway, taking us into the break. Don't go away. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM.